In the 1970s, Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butz told America's farmers to get big or get out. Since Butz made his proclamation, farms have been getting very big and farmers have been getting very few. This leads us contrarians to ask, can big farms be made into successful small farms?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1375th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Nandi who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. You know, Earl Butz was right. Farmers need to get big or get out if they are growing commodities. You see, in the commodity marketplace, whoever grows the most for the least wins the consumer's dollars. But, therefore, you know, to be a successful commodity farmer, you have to have a lot of commodities coming out of your field to win. Otherwise, you can't benefit from those economies of scale. But wait, how do commodity crops address the need of a hungry city people for real food grown in real soil by real farmers? Can you imagine your neighbor pounding on your door to show you a tomato he purchased that was grown in a field of 10,000 acres with millions of other tomatoes? No, not going to happen. When it comes to the high-value specialty crops city people like to tell their neighbors about, it really is not necessary for farmers to get big or get out to make a decent living. In fact, small parcels of land located close to a hungry metropolitan marketplace can be made to be perfectly suitable. The real question for metropolitan farmers, therefore, is how to gain enough control over metropolitan land to grow high-value specialty crops. And that need for control leads us to ask, who better to ask, as a matter of fact, than the man with a plan? He is Peter Savio of Savio Realty Limited, Hawaii. Peter, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Show.
And thank you for having me.
Savio Realty Limited. You know, from your website, it says Savio Realty Limited is one of Hawaii's top real estate companies specializing in everything. So how did you come to specialize in everything in Hawaii?
My mother was a very prominent realtor in the 50s and 60s. And I started starting to see her when I was about 8 or 9 years old at my first property at 15. And I had that joy of working with my mom, but my mom was also one of the top realtors in the state at that point, and very involved with all of the changes that came with Sinkhead, and came with us starting our first condo statue in America. So I kind of aged through the whole history, and I ended up being an affordable housing developer.
Wow. So you went from being a realtor to a developer. Which is,
I'm a realtor and also a developer, but I've pretty much spent all my time on the development side. But I own a real estate company that sells my property as well as others.
Okay, good. I had a friend who was out on the island of Oahu driving around and ran across probably one of your signs for condominium farming, and he slammed on his brakes and took everything down and sent me the information and said, Michael, you got to check this out. And I did. And here we are. But before we move on any further, a couple of years ago, I was engaged in conversation with a couple and their children in the Sydney airport. And they were talking about how they take their kids to all of the islands in the Pacific as a way of educating them about the world. And so I thought, well, that's a perfect opportunity to ask a question, which is, which islands in the Pacific are best? Without a second of hesitation, Both parents chimed in, Hawaii. So, Peter Savio, what makes Hawaii the best?
Hawaii is really unique. And I think a lot of it has to do with our location in the Pacific. I mean, where seas are isolated, and we're as far away or above the equator as you can be and still be tropical. So we tend to be clean air. We don't have the high humidity. We have a nice trade wind day almost every day. It really is a wonderful, wonderful, unique place.
That's pretty much what they said. Everything is just right. And according to my experience, which is a little bit, I've been around the Pacific a few times, but when you get close to the equator, it gets hot. And you have to hide from that sun, or you just cook. And Hawaii is always just right.
Yeah, we're fortunate, like I say, we're just sharing it away. If we were another 10, 12 miles above the equator, we wouldn't be tropical. We wouldn't have coconut trees. A lot of plants couldn't grow. And because of our location, just about every crop can be grown in Hawaii, as long as you don't need snow.
There you go. Then if you need snow, you have to go climb up Haleakala or something like that, right?
Only on a snowy day, because a lot of times there is none there either.
Okay. Well, let's turn to your project, which is Ohana Farm Parcels Condominium Farming, which is a mouthful. And I really found the concept very interesting because a book I wrote called Metro Farm, one of the models that I laid on the table was four young men, I think maybe three young men and one young woman, took 8-acre parcel of land and divided it up into 2-acre parcels. And by golly, they used their little, I called them apartment farms, 2 acres, to start a business for themselves. They were close to the city, so they were able to have a good market, and they were able to help each other out when needed. So it seemed to work pretty good. So when I saw your concept of condominium farming, I thought about that. Is that kind of where you're going?
You're going to find the tsunami. Because we were the first state to approve condominiums back in 60, we tend to have condominium facilities, condominium hotels, residential condos, shopping center condos. We've condominiumized everything. And especially when it actually works really well as a condo. And the mainland, you may have co-op or this succession co-op and condo in the ownership portion of concept would be considered very similar. But we prefer the condo here just because we're more familiar with it. The parcel, on top of that, was owned by a larger farmer. And he took it and converted it to 40s, 10-acre lot. But he had trouble selling. His 10 acres is too big for a small farmer, and he said for a big farmer. So I bought the 10-acre parcel and converted him to 2 acres. I said that in one day.
Wow.
And we had thousands of small farmers sign up on our reservation list for future projects. And what we really proved is there is a demand, at least on Oahu or in Hawaii, a small farmer. Now, to put it into perspective for you, an acre of land, ag land on Oahu, costs anywhere from, let's say, $100,000 to $250,000 per acre. So the land is a lot more expensive than you would find in a mainland ag area. And I think the farmers have to work a little harder. When a farmer can earn up to $200,000 a year, family, a one-acre parcel. So there's money to be made as a farmer. It's expensive to get in. And it makes it easy here, again, it's a federal farm loan program, because without them, the payments would be too high. So it's kind of hard to get into place. You have a high cost of land, but we also have a very hard-working group of farmers. And, you know, you got to realize our flowers come from America, Philippines, China, Japan, Cambodia, Thailand, you name it. They're probably here farming somewhere. And that's exactly what we find out in the project we did. We ended up with farmers from many, many different countries who have moved to Hawaii, and they want us to go back to farming. So it's been a really interesting project. And I think it's going to be very exciting.
Well, I guess so. And, you know, when it gets right down to it, those countries that you brought up around the world have a very long tradition of space-intensive agriculture.
Right.
So it's probably, if you were to take somebody from Kansas and offer them a two-acre farm, they might go, I can't even turn my tractor around in 2 acres.
Yeah.
So what are you talking about?
Exactly. I would be lucky to share because we went to market the 1 and 2 acres to start. And it was interesting because, you know, the farmer said, Peter, we don't want to buy 5 acres or more because you're not a farmer if you buy 5 acres. You're a businessman and found. Because now you need employees and insurance and workers' comp and a company. He says, no, we're farmers. We're going to get our hands dirty. Our sons are going to help us. Our wives are. Our family is. We're a tree farmer. So it was interesting how they, you know, separated. You know, we would say separate farmer, but they're going down to the businessman farmer. He really isn't necessarily going out and doing all the work himself, but he's hiring people. Where these farms are people that are going to be doing all of the work themselves.
Many of the farms here in the Central California coast are run, of course, run by farmers, but most of them hire a contractor who hires different services to do things. And oftentimes, you know, they're not in the field, but their employees are in the field. And what you're talking about is bringing people and putting them back on the land with a size that can be managed by hand. Especially right. If there are people around who can lend a hand with this and that, and a tractor or something like that.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. So a model that I saw here in the Monterey Bay area so many years ago actually is something that you're really developing. But you're taking it a step farther because you're offering people fee simple ownership of land, which is earth-shaking. So when we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up exactly how you're doing this because it's very fascinating. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What? With Peter Savio of Savio Realty Limited. And if you want to look up what we're talking about, go to the Ohana Farm Parcels Farming, O-H-A-N-A. And you'll see amazing stuff happening. This is the Food Chain. We will be right back. So please do stay tuned.
let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, one day Peter Salvio got a great idea. What was the apple that fell on your head? How did you come up with this great idea, Peter?
Actually, the sugarcane fish in Chicago's in the 70s and 80s. And you know, they were 20, 30,000 acres. And to compensate the laborers who were losing jobs, they gained a group of them some land in the North Shore, what we call Wainua. And so they had 1 to 2 acre parcels. And they sat there for 30, 40 years. Then the plantation decided to sell the land. The farmers didn't know how to buy it, so they called up and asked me if I'd help, and I said, sure. So I was going to do what you would call a fee conversion, convert them from leasehold to fee simple. And then we realized, well, the structure they're using as a farm didn't work well for white people financing, and they had trouble getting financing because you cannot build a head on egg land, or very difficult to, because if we allowed people to build homes, they'd all be a C. They wouldn't be fired. So then I came up with the idea of building a plantation camp where you flush in the orange and everyone gets a 5,000 square foot lot on which they can build a house. And then their farm is, you know, not too far away. So we put that all together and came up with this condominium concept. And really, really excited because we sort of solved all the problems that farmers were having in terms of financing, passing it on to their family, and a sand everything. The co-op and the condo structure also worked well. But we ended up with a lot of the large retail grocery product companies coming and telling our farmers, you grower, we'll buy it. We'll even help you. We'll tell you what we want. We'll help you in terms of how to plant, maintain it, et cetera. So, I mean, the whole chain is going to benefit from what we're doing. It's just in for a guy who does affordable housing, this was sort of a really kind of neat and exciting experience. And now it's a little more complex, and we are doing affordable housing, but we're also solving Hawaii's problem of where we import and the sand is our food, which is very expensive. And now we have a chance where the small farmers, which I suspect will end up being 5, 6, 10,000 once we're done, should be able to produce what we need and grow it locally.
Did you say 5, 6, 10,000 farmers?
Well, we already have it with 2,000 that have signed up wanting to buy in our projects as we continue to do additional ag projects. I've already sold, I think, 600. My problem is finding additional land. It's very difficult to get ag land in Hawaii and get it at a price where you can afford to retrain it. We're working at that. We sold back 3 projects already. And usually in the matter of a few days, once we announced it.
Wow. Tell us how it works from finding the land to dividing it up and figuring out how to make it work for everybody. Because what you laid out seems like it's almost too good to be true.
The reason it's too good to be true is our history. When I was growing up, there were no small farmers. None. In fact, anyone who wanted to be a small farmer moves to California and bought a farm up there. And if you check certain areas of California, you will find that hundreds of those farmers are from Hawaii. A lot of Japanese, a lot of local farmers moved up prior to and after the war because the sugar plantations and the pineapple plantations and all the land. So you really couldn't find a lot of small farms. They just have kind of dissolved, and they're selling their land. They're going out of business. There's only one pineapple plantation still left. Everything else has been converted to fee. So I miss out in the sense that I'm buying land. that has been farmed by a large company for, you know, 150 years, they actually put in the range, designated the field. Now, their field might be 20 acres. I simply have to take it and slit it up into, you know, 2 acre pieces. But they have the range. They usually have an irrigation system in place. And if I'm lucky, I can use most, if not all of it. So it's not too expensive to extend it by adding your valves, et cetera, so each farmer can control his own water use. So again, we sort of locked out because of our history of large plantation. If we actually had to take land that had never been farmed and had to get rid of the trees, then haul away all of the rocks and everything else, it probably cost $400,000 an acre. So it would just get too expensive. So again, it's just, it's not me as much as the opportunity was there. I saw it, I see it. And of course, now it looks like it's going to work.
You're kind of like a junkyard of industrial agriculture. You're taking things that don't work anymore and taking them apart and making them work again.
Yeah. And like I say, the water sits unfair, so we know it works. You know, they till the land, it has the tilts they need, has the drainage you need.
Yes. And why did
work's already been done. And of course, the farmers know the land. I mean, they know it's good land. I mean, for death work.
The farmers we have is some of our
farmers want to be organic. So we have to set them aside because the land can't be used for 3 years. And the large plantations tend to be chemical heavy. And in some cases, it's still an issue and you have to wait a little longer for it to be that than be the better. It's a regular farmers are in it to start pretty much right away.
And if you go out, well, I don't know when your friend was here, but if they were to come back
and drive by that Fay Fires today, they notice a number of people have started building, you know, barns or storage sheds. A lot of them have already started planting crops or growing.
It's like I said, it's just kind of an interesting plastic
to see the excitement that we created within the farming community.
Oh, my goodness. Having access to land that can be your land is the truly amazing thing about it, because most small farmers are stuck with some kind of rental or lease agreement or sharecropping agreement. And, you know, the thought of having your own fee simple land is beyond comprehension to most of them.
You know, we are land short to start. You know, it's interesting because a residential lot of, let's say, 5,000 square feet would sell for $400,000. And that a land acre would sell for $130,000. So, land is a lot cheaper than residential. The problem is you can't build the house on it, or it's very restricted.
Okay. So, that you can't build a house on it means there are no houses on it. So, that raises the question of how it can be financed, because there's nothing for a bank to lend on.
That's the problem. That's why we did the plantation camp. So we're going to crush the orange in a camp. So there'll be a camp of, let's say, 150 ice lots with 150 homes. Each family will own a house lot and the ability to build a house, but you'll actually own 2 acres of farmland, you know, within probably a mile of that location. And so it makes sense because now you can finance the property with regular financing. Right now, the only financing you can use for agriculture is federal grant, because they do not require a house. They do require the land to farm. So our people will farm it, and they should get the federal funds now. And of course, once that app is approved, and the ANSI is approved, then they can go to the farmer's home loan and get financing for that.
And they combine the house on the plantation. What did you call it? Plantation village?
Yeah, it's in chat.
Yeah, well, it's
really a planned unit development be the main one, and for describing it. But because of that, that's ancient history, then for people understand plantation camp,
which is nothing more than a cluster of homes
right.
in a farming community. So it's like a small villa at Madison. In fact, in our law, the lot for a plantation camp should not be more than 5,000 square feet. Because they're definitely afraid if the lot's bigger, mainland buyers should buy it, and it meant you come a farming community and become a rare, wealthy, safe-type community. So we have all these little works we have to work around, which is really to preserve the land for its agricultural use and give the farmer the chance to succeed.
It seems to me like what you put together here is a modern update of the classic ancient Chinese farm village, where the farmers lived in a plantation camp, as it were, and then they walked out into the fields, wherever they might happen to have a field. But the fields were too important to put housing on, and so you clustered them together. There it is. Now, in the homesteading days, the government would give you 160 acres out in the prairies of Montana and whatnot. But you had to prove up. Now, if the government is giving people money to farm, is there some kind of criteria for proving up?
Well, you have to act if you find the property under the federal program. So the property has to be found. It should not just be left fallow, or technically not even rented to someone else. You're supposed to farm. Although the federal program does allow you to lease, as a rule, our program does now. We don't want to let the individuals buying land and then leasing it to a farmer. Our purpose is to have the farmer earn the land. If you work like a school being a farmer, and the benefit is you retire, then that land, and that land is your retirement, and it's whatever you're going to possibly give to your children. So interested?
I'm not about ownership.
I'm not a big supporter of rental programs. I believe in ownership.
Amen. Amen to that, my goodness. So you put a project together. You have, I'm looking at your Ohana project, 222 acres, 111 farm lots available. How do you organize this? Sounds like chaos to me.
Not really, because the fields were laid out in 10 to 20 acre pieces. So we just had to hire a surveyor and go back in and say, okay, resurvey it. So we have at least 2 acres. And that must be 2.5 acres or, 3 inches, since we had 2 maps in one corner or something. But I have not set to write 2 acre, which is the minimum size for our zoning. And then if a farmer wants 4 acres, he just buys 2 lots side by side. But so far, we've had very few farmers that took 4 acres or even 5 acres.
Too much.
Majority are 2 acres. If you're one family or one group, yes, that's fine.
Okay. What about a governing authority? I mean, you have a 222-acre parcel of land divided up into 111 farm lots. Who's running the show?
Yeah, just to put it back into perspective, your friend took a picture and was trying for the second income. The first stage we rent was another 200 acres. And 120 on. So it's really a 450-acre parcel, and it's going to be one condominium association. The farmers will elect the board of directors, and the board of directors will set all the rules for farming. Okay, so all the regulations in terms of the corns that you can use and can't use, if you have to trim your tree because it's casting a shadow, all those types of things. It's a state governing entity.
So Peter doesn't want to get involved in governing it, does he?
I'm not a farmer. To me, I was worried at first about the farmers running the own condominium or homeowners association. But once I started working with them, they are exceptional people. They really are. they understand working together. They understand you're operating, and you're going to be an example of money, the tractor. I mean, they're already doing that. People were sitting there, oh, I have a tractor. I'll let you borrow it. You get some of our farmers. There was one farmer who was always a little bit of a problem, and he didn't have a lot of friends, but he got sick. Everyone else took care of his farm for him, even though they didn't like the guy because they said that's just the way it is. I mean, I just feel so good at the quality of people. And I think a lot of it has to do with raising your own teams and actually the hard work of farming and getting your hands and your feet in that dirt, being grounded. Just an exceptional experience as a developer.
Kind of like what Thomas Jefferson said about farmers. It's hard to find a farmer with a bad moral character. Because
no, I could believe that.
It just doesn't work that way. Okay.
Another interesting thing too is Hawaii has a family program at the University of Hawaii. So we're also getting a lot of kids 20 years old wanting to farm.
I believe that. I went on a farm tour this past week in the Monterey Bay area here. A lot of kids. And I could just see they would be running for your program in a minute. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Peter Savio of Savio Realty Limited. We're talking about condominium farming and why not take a big parcel of land, divide it up into a bunch of small parcels of land so real people can grow real food in real soil and make everybody happy. Do stay tuned when we come back. I'd like to ask about the money. Is there any money in it? Must be. Right back.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place during the Battle of the Komondorski Islands, March 1943.
All the gunfire that had been aimed at the Salt Lake City was now coming directly for us. From my position up in the gun director atop the bridge, I could actually see the rounds coming from the Japanese cruisers. Captain would yell up, "Over or under?" I'd yell my guess back down, and he'd give the helmsman his orders. Those Japs had their batteries lined up right, I'll tell you. They dropped a dozen shots, short, then walked right up, as neat as you please. Their dispersion wasn't 20 feet, and that's what you want to see. Except, of course, if you happen to be on the wrong end of that gunfire. Hell, even the men down the fire room knew we were done for.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Northland Berry News, Paul Otten.
What a book. It's obvious MetroFarm was not written by someone sitting in an ivory tower. It comes from the trenches, from the School of Hard Knocks. A superb job.
Ag reporter Nancy Barr. MetroFarm addresses just about every issue involved in planning, planting, growing, harvesting, packaging, transporting, and marketing of a crop.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
When I went to write my book, Metro Farm, I was searching around for people who were actually making money farming small parcels of land. Went to the Census of Agriculture and learned that whereas the average acre of farmland in Iowa, the heart of the heartland, was making $113 per acre per year, the average acre in the city limits of San Francisco was making $89,000 per acre per year. That was way back when. And it's more like, if you translated that $89,000 into today's money, it's pretty close to $200,000 an acre. So how did they do that? Well, I snuck around and found people actually doing it. And inevitably, they were very, very clever business people. Peter?
I think that's very true. I was really surprised when I talked to these small farmers and asked them, who do you sell to? And they were selling to some of the best restaurant, the best hotel, supermarkets. Either the mainly snack farmer may have just one restaurant and sandwiches, and he brings them fresh vegetables every single day. And I said, well, how did you get that quiet? And he looked at me and said, I'm Cambodian.
This stuff's Cambodian.
And I thought, oh, that's right. In Hawaii, that's how everybody gets ahead. You know, and it worked out. But I mean, almost every farmer we talked to was growing to sell to a grocery store or to a particular restaurant. Some of them even owned the grocery store. And they were growing to sell. They're the hardest working people. They really are. They're at snap reach farmers markets, and they do actually make a pretty good living.
How much does an acre of land cost? Let's say somebody signs up to be one of your farmers.
Okay. Well, you better, and I'm a very unusual developer because I'm not a for-profit developer. Before me, all the ag land was selling in the $200,000 rate, $250,000 an acre. I came in at $60,000 to $130,000 an acre because I sell at cost plus 5%. So I try to make 5%, but I'm happy if I break even.
Yeah,
and a very different developer, but, you know, tuning up with the farmers, it's worth it, really is.
So how much does an acre of land cost if for one of your farmers? Can you give us some round numbers?
The highest farmer is the one you're talking about.
Yes.
$130,000 per acre, $260,000 for 2 acres.
Okay, so $250,000 for 2 acres. Now, does that give them access to the plantation camp?
The price of the land, for the house lot is included, and the infrastructure for the water and rain is included. Oh, it's a penny prior.
Okay. So they can build a house.
Well, we have to get the house lease approved under a separate permit. And there's no guarantee that Colleen will give us the permit for the camp. So if we get the permit for the camp, we will build the houses. If not, then they have the right to sell the land, if agricultural land, and then they would get the money for that because they already own the land.
Okay. So there's incentive there. There's incentive to grow, and without incentive to grow, people don't grow. So that's the interesting thing. So farmers, what kind of control do they have over their own land then? How does that work? To farm, you have to have tenure of some kind guaranteed, whether it's a lease or a rental agreement or a fee simple ownership.
Yeah.
You have to have control or you can't farm.
No. It's in a condo, these are fee simple condominium apartments, in which an owned lot condo apartment. So just like a residential condo, you have a one bedroom, a two bedroom. And, you know, if you live in it, you own that unit and finance that unit. Well, this is just land. It's what they call a facial unit because there is no wall, there is no roof, there's just land. So they own the land in fee. They have the rights to farm the land, And there can be no restriction that stops them from doing any agricultural use approved by zoning. So if somebody wants to range, just anything, you can range chickens as long as your zoning allows it. If somebody wants to have billy goats, they can have it. Any use that our zoning allows should be allowed. So you have absolute control as far as the law will let you go.
And so you can do what you want. And how much control do you, or how much tenure do you actually have? So if you bring in $250,000 cash, then that's yours.
That's yours.
That's yours. If you're borrowing the money from the bank, there's no money. You can't borrow money from the bank.
You can. You'd have a first mortgage on your ag lot. The fee simple ag lot. But you can have an individual loan. That's the advantage of condominium, where you can actually have individual debt on each ag lot.
Okay. And ag banks lend on that?
Correct.
Okay, so there you go.
The lender we have right now is a mainland ag lender. So when we got the property, we as a developer, we gave us a loan to buy the total. For the CSAC financing, we're going with a federal government program because they will give a better interest rate. So their interest rate is going to be 2 or 3%, which slightly means $130,000 apartment or land cost. If we financed it locally, it would be 6 or 7%. So it's really the monthly payment of a $60,000 an acre property. So the federal financing is what makes agriculture, to me, super, super beneficial because they're giving the farmers a break on the interest rate.
Yes, doing something decent with their money for a change.
It was invented like on the city, so I'm not sure they tried it and just happened.
Good. How many projects like this have you done, Peter Savio?
Affordable housing is all I do. I've probably done 50 to 60. I've given away $300 to $400 million in profit away in the form of mayor pricing. Because I'm a cash developer. Yeah. On the ag side, I've done 3 projects so far, and we're planning to do, we're hoping to do another 4,000 to 5,000 acres. But, you know, we have to find the land and we have to find the financing. So we're trying to get the first 3 projects through and successful, and then make any changes or tweaks we need to make it better. And then we're going to go out and do a home group. As Lord's Nangasir Saman.
Now, you're working on Oahu now. What about the other islands as well? Maui has some significant farmland there.
Yeah, all the islands had actually good farmland. The nice thing is, if you go to the big island, the island of Hawaii, the land there is probably more like 10,000 an acre, 20,000 an acre. If you go to Maui, it's probably going to be 200,000 an acre, just because that's the way Maui is. And Dana Kauai, right now, they're selling the land to developers in around 40,000 an acre. Okay. I'm buying land on Oahu as a developer at 80 to 90,000 an acre. So Oahu has the highest land price, and I suspect Maui would be one there with Oahu, maybe a little ahead. So you can, depending on which island, you get really good land on all the islands. We have good shipping between the islands. But you can pretty much farm any island. Mercy's just a fair Oahu, just because it's the big city, has the most entertainment, the most everything. So
well, that's where the money is, right? In the city. So there it is.
Well, it's interesting because the large barber we bought from, he's moving from Oahu to Kauai, and he's going to take 5,000 acres on Kauai and farm up there because he can get farm workers on Kauai. He cannot get farm workers on Oahu. Too much other job opportunities and competition. And the pay on the neighbor island is actually a little cheaper to live in some cases because of housing and everything. So, we have some large farmers on the way, but I really think the future for Hawaii is not the large farmer, not the 5,000, 10,000 acre. It's going to be the small farmers. And I think that's this project has done. It's kind of sapped our government. If there was this kind of demand, the federal government was super excited because they never are able to loan all the money on the farm programs in Hawaii. And now we actually created a demand to where they're going to be able to loan out more money. So I think it's revolutionizing how we look at farms and how we look at raising steam for our own consumption.
Has Peter Savio considered franchising Peter Savio?
I'm sure somebody who needs some for free. They don't need a franchise. Not that difficult to do.
Well, I'm thinking about replicating what you do around the United States and the rest of the world. Why not? Is there a reason why not?
No, I think it's a great model to follow. Once you started off by sharing how the government went into the large farms, well, that's maybe fine, but if you're looking here in Hawaii, we went from large farms or plantations the opposite direction. And of our large farms went out of business. They could not compete in the world market. You know, our shipping costs and everything were a little too great. Our land shortages had higher property taxes, et cetera. And we should be opposite. And I'd like to think that we're ahead of the rest of the world or the nation. And where the government went for large farms, the actual solution is go back to the family farm, the 5 acre, smaller, but also the 10 and 20 acre. Now, if you're getting into cattle and stuff, you need a bigger, farm per se. But I know one of the farmers was telling me about New Zealand, where the Maori people are starting to farm, and they're farming using their traditional method. And, they were giving an example of where a normal cattle rancher has, 300 head on so many acres, when the Maori should have 500 or 600 head, because they know a certain grass so faster, and so they slap the grass, and they said, we're not cattle growers or cattle ranchers. We're grass farmers. So they raise the grass and they move the cattle from one hill to another. I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, just this intelligent.
It takes us back to those farmers of 40 centuries that F.H. King wrote about. Farmers who figured out how to manage their little tiny parcels of land and feed. In 1900, they were feeding 400 million people on little half acres of land. The real sad thing about that is that it took a tremendous amount of intelligence to be able to do that. And when China moved those people off farms and into the cities to turn wrenches and factories, a lot of that technology is going missing.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to hear that a lot of the people from all over the world are coming to Hawaii to farm.
What? It's not that true. We tend to be a blending of Asia and America. So we tend to get a lot of people out of Asia coming to Hawaii. And they just feel very comfortable here. Our food, we see probably very different Asian life, which is here. Their populations, their culture can survive. The interesting thing is we all get along. But Hawaii is one place, if you want to eat, we have to have the best food in the world because we have food from everywhere. And we have combinations that, I go to the mainland and I find the food boring compared to Hawaii. But, I can go to, 30 different Indian restaurants, Thai or Vietnamese, Cambodian. Just all kinds of restaurants, all kinds of flavors, and any of them grand different crops. Right? So you end up with vegetables and fruits you've never heard of, and they bring them in, they teach each other how to do it, and it becomes part of our culture.
And that's exactly what I opened with, how does commodity agriculture addressed the hunger of city people for unique, delicious food. It doesn't. And so what you are developing, Peter Savio, in Hawaii is the opportunity for people to feed the state.
Yeah.
And in very unique ways with very unique foods and make money doing it.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that surprised me is I assumed that you had 2 acres, you'd grow tomatoes and you'd grow lettuce. No. They grow 1 row of lettuce, 1 row of onion, 1 row. They have like 20, 30 different plants. And they make more money because they should sell more variety. And so people are more inclined to come to their food. And I mean, I never thought of farming that way. I just thought I'd see the plantation, 1,000 acres of sugar cane, 1,000 acres of pineapple. And all of a sudden, you go to a small farmer and he's got, you know, 10, 12, 20 different crops he's growing.
There it is. Peter Savio, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for educating us about condominium farming in Hawaii. Should be something we can do everywhere, and by golly, I'll bet it's going to happen. Thank you for leading the way. This has been The Food Chain.
Thank
Michael
you.
Olson.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.